the Canadian Bitcoiners podcast is just two guys and maybe a guest or two discussing Bitcoin, Bitcoin equities, and the related macroeconomic space. It's not meant to be financial advice, so please, if you're doing any investing after listening to our program, do your own research, do your own due diligence, and understand that any money you invest can be lost. The show is meant for entertainment purposes only, and we hope you enjoy the program. The Trap Drums video still cracks me up. Friends and enemies, welcome to another episode of the Canadian Bitcoiners podcast on the CBP Media Network. This is episode 76, Len. 76 weeks we've gotten together and chopped it up about Bitcoin and economics. How you doing over there, brother? It's good to see you.
Yeah, it's good over here, Julia. Unfortunately, the weather isn't cooperating. It's been freaking cold the last couple of days. Have you noticed that? It's just...
I'm geared up, man. Look at me. I got the sweatshirt on. I'm wearing pants today. Yeah, I feel it. I feel it. I'm with you.
I'm always wearing shorts and t-shirts, even in the wintertime. It doesn't matter. I keep the house warm and it's always winter in my head. So yeah, everything's good here. Just living the dream as always. Everything okay over there, Joey? I saw, you know, wild weekend it looks like.
I had a good time yesterday at the annual Dundites, I call them, yard crawl, which I understand is referred to by polite company as a progressive dinner. Have you ever heard a yard crawl called a progressive dinner before?
I never even heard of a yard crawl before.
Really?
Yeah,
it's like so my in-laws live in Dundas along with a bunch of my wife's friends, now my friends I guess as well, of course, and every year we get together around this time, sometime between August and September, and we do what they call a yard crawl, what I would call a yard crawl. What it is five or six houses, depending on the number of people that we get, availability of all the pals. Every house does a hole of mini putt, a signature drink, and a little bit of food. So yesterday we also added a genre of music. So we were going from like 90s hip hop to emo music, like emo and punk, to old school country. And then we finished at my in-laws' place for some disco and Motown, which was outstanding stuff. So yeah, a lot of fun, man. A lot of Coors Lights consumed yesterday. You probably hear my voice a little bit, you know,
it's damaged. Crackly.
Yeah, it's damaged from yesterday night, but all said, man, it was a lot of fun. I was happy to do it. It's always good to be with friends and family. So no
complaints.
Sounds
like you went to the track and started yelling at your horse that didn't come in first.
I was doing a lot of yelling yesterday, I'll tell you that. But no, it was good. But all said, Len, it's good to be here with you and with listeners, viewers. So I see the chat's already cruising, which is dope. We got a lot to talk about tonight. But first, the sponsors, Len. Two sponsors. ShakePay. Mm-hmm. Best place for Canadians to buy and never sell Bitcoin. Four things going on. Plus a fifth if you count the $30 on your first $100 buy if you use our promo code CBP. And if you use that code, you can also get something called Shaking Sats. You shake your phone every day up to day 365. They add a little bit every day. Satoshi stream free to your wallet. It's incredible. And then after day 365, you keep shaking. It's 1,000 sats a day from there on out, which is great. I will say, Len, my wife lost her 700-plus day streak 2 days ago. She forgot to shake her phone in the morning on Friday, I think, and lost her streak. Unbelievable longevity.
Days. That's good for her. That's quite a commitment. And yeah,
she's netted like close to 5 million sats, I'm pretty sure, from shaking sats. Yeah, over the you know, 4 or 5 years we've been using ShakePay, maybe a little less than that, but anyway. So you got that. Then you got the Shake Squads, which we've been talking about a lot since we ran a contest for t-shirts the other week about these Shake Squads. You and four of your friends get together every time you buy on your CAD card. You get 42 Satoshis, and all of your teammates get it too, which is great. So if you buy something, they buy something, everyone wins. Can't go wrong with that. They also have the Sats back card. So same thing, CAD balance. You get 2% back on your first 5,000 in Satoshis, first 5,000 spent, 1% back in perpetuity after that. And they got Shake paid still. Unbelievably, these guys are giving away some percentage of purchases you make on your CAD balance all back to you in Satoshis. Unbelievable promotion. We love ShakePay. We think they're a great Canadian company. And if you haven't given them a shot, you really should. And use our promo code CBP. Who's the other sponsor, Len?
It's Ledin. And open up an account with our referral code below and fund your Ledin account with 150,000 sats or 75 USDC and keep it on their platform for 15 consecutive days. And Ledin will gift you 10 USDC. And if you do have a large amount of Bitcoin on your holdings and you don't want to sell it and you have some bills you want to pay, why not simply borrow against it? And Ledin is there to help you out. And you can just put your Bitcoin on their platform, 50% loan to value. They'll give you some money and you're good to go to pay those bills. And also there's the option of B2X. If you think the price of Bitcoin is going up, and shoot, it just changed on my block clock, so I can't say if it is going up or down, but I always think it's going up in my head. Well, use B2X, double up your Bitcoin stack, time the market right, and pull out once it goes up a little bit or quite a bit. And voila, now you have a lot more Bitcoin or a little bit more Bitcoin on your balance sheet just by using the B2X option and timing the market. And the last thing they do have is the Bitcoin-backed mortgages. This is an industry first, and but not available in every jurisdiction. So please, if you're checking this out, make sure it's available in your jurisdiction. But since you're there on the website, why not look at what are their interest rates for the borrowing and savings, because they change on a month-to-month basis. And Joey, for the shake streak for ShakePay, you got to get one of those can shakers for, like, they use for paint. You got to bring one of those things home. Just shove your phone in there every night. In the morning, you're good. Just unfortunately, the phone may may not be able to survive that.
The longevity in question in the paint shaker.
That's why you buy a shitty phone to do that, but that's gaming the system. But yeah, there's a few other things I want to talk about before we go on any further, Joey.
Sure.
Number one, we're going to stop with the Bitcoin Ekasi donations. We'll go back to them eventually. But for the next 7 days, we're going to be donating all sats to us. It's going to be automatically redirected to a gentleman by the name of Norman Remont, at Norman Remont. He's on Twitter. He is a loyal follower of the show, and he's donated quite a bit of sats to us over the last little while. So we're very thankful for his donations to that eventually went to Bitcoin Ekasis and Bitcoin Smiles. He's getting married in a couple of months. So or is it next month? And as a thank you for his listenership and for giving him a gift for his wedding, for the next 7 days, all sats donated to us are going to be directed straight to Norman. So hopefully he could use this to fund his new life with his new bride. So congratulations, Norman. And that's all I got to say about that part.
I can't believe when I saw that message from Len, he sent me this on, I can't remember if it was Friday or Saturday. I was coming home from the gym and I saw the message pop on my phone. I had to call the man and ask him if it was in fact what I thought it was. We were going to be giving our sats to a guy who's getting married. This is just so weird, man. As the show continues to grow, I find myself, you know, shaking my head laughing at some of the things that come our way. But yeah, happy to help, man. Congratulations. Big congrats to Norman on that. On the marriage. I don't want to congratulate him yet. Is that jinxing it? I don't know. What is the ethic around this kind of thing?
I don't know. I mean, wish him the best in all respects. And so donate to us. It's going to go to him. It's for a good cause. I also want to do a little bit of flexing here, Joey. On the Fountain website, you could take a look to see where we are in the charts, the Canadian Bitcoiners podcast. Right now, we're sitting at 30. We were as high, I think, as 23 at one point, which is not too bad. But we are ahead of such shows like Pomp, Levera Show. I see BTC Sessions is behind us. Anything else that I see? Texas Slim's show is behind us. Valis' show is behind us. So we're ahead of quite a few good shows. So a big thank you to everybody that is listening and donating to us. And again, it's going to good causes. So yeah, this is great stuff. We're hanging in with some big boys here.
We're number 30 on the list right now. So pretty good, man. Rabbit Hole Recaps at the top there. And then there's a few other super heavy hitters. Citadel Dispatch, WBD is there. Yeah, quite a bit. Man, it is good though. I'm happy to see the progress. Len, if that's all the housekeeping you have, I have one thing I want to add.
Go ahead.
At the moment, just like last year at this time, Wayside House, an agency for which I am on the board of directors, is doing their fundraising walk. I don't know exactly what day it is. It's in October. I can't remember if it's the 10th or the 21st. But if you have some money to spare and you want to help a great cause, it's a men's addiction agency that I've been working with, volunteering for, really, on the board for the better part of a decade now. I think I'm on my eighth or ninth year anyway. Money that agency raises is going to a capital project to expand the capacity of the house right now. So we're going to try and go from, I think we're at about 20 beds, give or take, depending on the, COVID restrictions. We want to expand out to 60 and be autonomous with those 60 beds, which is difficult for an agency that size. So if you do have a couple of bucks and you feel like giving, or if you have questions about the agency, you want to talk about, some stuff we're doing, I'm happy to answer them as best I can. The link is the pinned tweet, I think, on my profile at the moment. I should probably check that before I make that claim. It is the pinned tweet. So yeah, if you can donate, awesome. If you can't, that's okay too. Some of you guys have already donated it. I really appreciate it. And I also want to thank ShakePay, who donated, I think, $500 or something like that. Really awesome of them to do that, because they obviously sponsor the show. And so we're getting money from them as it is, but for them to make a donation of that size means a lot. So thanks to them right away. And yeah, if you have questions, let me know, man. Happy to talk about it.
I like Chooch's comment there where he says he can't wait to get married. I wonder why.
Everyone's going to be getting married now, man. Everyone's going to be getting married.
Like
now.
Joe asking if we could donate to his electricity bill. So, you know, to be perfectly honest, I'm not sure exactly how many sats we get because it's automatically redirected. It could be hundreds of thousands or 10 sats. I have no clue. So hopefully it's a lot for Norman this month. And
Good luck, this week.
Yeah. So, anyways, the price of Bitcoin, Joy, I have it handy in Canadian. If you don't in US, I give you
19,769 US. My trading trading view open on the phone here. Ready for
all it right? So in Canadian, just under 26 at 25,958. Let's see if we bump this over 26 through the duration of the show. But yeah, that's it for the housekeeping items. Anything else you want to just knock off the list before we move to the A block, Joey?
Just one more. I was on Why We Bullish on Friday night. I saw a lot of you guys in the chat that night, which I really appreciate. It means a lot to me and to the show and to Len as well that you guys support us when we go on Ben's program. Ben's a gracious host as ever. And yeah, check it out if you haven't gone to see it. It was a great panel. Me, Chris Boucher. I can't remember his last name, but it's
B-O-E-T-T. It starts with a B.
Yeah, he's a really good guy. And you're going to be seeing more of him on the media network without giving up too many details. I'll say that much. And then Mark, whose last name I forget, from Bitcoin Magazine. Mark Goodwin, I think. And it was a really good discussion, man. We covered a lot of different bases. Energy, the importance of action as men, building stuff, you know, how Bitcoin sort of incentivizes you to build and create and discover skills you didn't have. And then I talked about the ESG narrative falling apart. So yeah, lots of good bullish stuff on that episode. And I hope you check it out. Absolutely slayed. Yeah, thanks, Boomer. I appreciate that, man. I had a great time. It was a lot of fun, as always.
It was fun by all, even the listeners. We had a good hoot when you kept rolling downhill. We're going to get you rolling downhill in this one, Joey, because there's another good week to talk about the economy. And that's what I'm going to lead things off this week.
It's never a good week to talk about. We never really break good economic news on this program, but we do have news to talk about all the same.
Well, we did, I guess, break some good news last week when Canada reported a surplus in Q1 2022. So I guess there's some good news for that, but we'll just, you know, sweep that under the rug for now. But in terms of our weekly economic talk, and again, I apologize, Joey, this is going to be another lengthy rant just like last week. And let's first start off with the newly hired IRS agents, because I suspect they're going to be very busy once they are all trained up. eBay just reported this past week they're going to be locking out accounts for users that sell products over $600. And the only way to have this unlocked is to enter a social security number, which is going to be used for IRS reporting. And I'm going to predict moving forward, there's going to be a lot more sales that are going to go under the radar, where cash is going to be used as a medium of exchange, perhaps even Bitcoin or some other digital assets. It's just a way to get around a $600 limit. So as for the economy, Joey, how long have we been talking about that shit is going to hit the fan with respect to the economy? What do you think? Months?
A long time. A long time, brother. Yeah, probably since we started the show, I would guess.
So more than a year and a half, or about a year and a half. Well, the bank rate survey came out, and 41% of Americans say they feel unprepared for a recession if it does happen by the end of next year. Well, 17% added they are not prepared at all. That's one in six. A little bit over one in six, actually. That's a lot. Well, let's move on to housing. Mortgage to income ratio, the highest since 2000. And even that, I'm not sure if 2000 was the peak, but the chart that I have, it only went back to 2000. It may be highest in history. I don't fucking know, but it's pretty damn high, the mortgage to income ratio. Another stat, one third of US homes sold in Q1 of this year went to investors. These are not for people intending to live in them. And I'm wondering, of that one third, how much is that inflated due to companies like BlackRock scooping up tons of homes?
A lot.
Or maybe it could be speculative investors who are just picking up homes right now, but they're probably going to get wrecked if it is speculative investors, as interest rates go up, mortgage payments go up, housing prices go down, and so forth. 30-year mortgages, in fact, they're now approaching 6% in the US. It's getting quite high to own a home. One in five homes on the market right now have dropped their price. Again, it's not very good sign moving forward. Inventory is up over 100% year over year in some markets. In fact, Phoenix is leading the pack with a whopping 177% inventory increase year over year. Get the fucking popcorn ready. This thing's going to actually blow up soon. But there's a plan in place, Joey. You heard about this, I'm pretty sure. For the people that are in need, the Bank of America, they're launching a zero down payment zero closing cost mortgage product to help members of predominantly minority communities to buy their first home.
I can't wait to hear how you're gonna get us banned from YouTube in the next 10 minutes.
I'm just reporting. So eligibility is based on income and home location. No minimum credit score or mortgage insurance is required, Joey. What if I self-identify as somebody from a minority community, or I self-identify myself as low income, or self-identify as somebody from living in a specific? Does this make me qualify for this? Joey, these terms here they're offering, this is at the precipice of a housing market crash. And the people that are going to be buying this are going to be buying at the absolute worst time. They're not going to be prepped for raising interest rates. They're not going to be prepped for housing prices going down. Shades of 2008 all over again. And rent, we could talk about that again. The national one-bedroom rent is now listing at a little bit less than $1,500. That's up almost 12% year over year. That's hard to sustain. And as the price of shelter goes up, discretionary spending obviously is going to have to go down. And this is is getting extremely bad for some people, and it's going to get worse as we move forward. In fact, let's talk about China, and it looks like the United States is starting to piss them off even further. So on a global front, we have reports that the U.S. is going to potentially sell missiles and radar equipment to Taiwan so they could better defend themselves. That's good and all, but this is going to cause some real issues. How are they going to retaliate? The sale, though, is going to net the U.S. $1.1 billion in cash. This is probably going to keep them enough money to keep their operations going for about 37 minutes. And $1.1 billion, that's a lot of money. How come some of it is not going to be earmarked to what's going on in Jackson, Mississippi? And this is a city that unfortunately has run out of water due to neglection to their infrastructures. Now, you know what? The money, I'm pretty sure it's going to be decoration for Biden's next speech, where they're going to fund an even more pronounced red backdrop. Did you see that one? Did you see the picture of that? The memes and everything, they were fucking nuts.
Len, I don't know who does optics for this guy, but like between the stuff that his press people say and the red, like dark Brandon, I just am in disbelief. I'm honestly in disbelief. I don't know who's in charge over there, but that's the guy really we should be looking to replace, I think, if you're in the Biden White House. That's just unbelievable stuff.
Did you notice CNN over the course of that broadcast, they changed their tint slightly of the red to make it less reddish and slightly more purplish? Did you notice
that? Did that when Rogan had COVID too? They tried to like make him look like jaundiced. they're ridiculous, man.
Good for them. Somebody's playing with the switches.
Oh my God. I just don't know. Anyway, go ahead.
So basically when I was looking at those pictures, and this is going to be Seinfeld-esque. Is my retinas were fucking burning at the amount of red for coming from those pictures. But as for Jackson, Mississippi, and it's really not a joking matter, I read reports over there it's going to cost an estimated $2 billion to repair the aging infrastructure. And this is including replacing lead pipes, upgrading the treatment plant, and because the pump over there has failed, and so much more. Keep in mind, that's $2 billion estimated for a population of 163,000 people. It's a lot of money for a relatively small number of people. Imagine the cost of replacing the aging infrastructure in the rest of the country. Remember, we had the $1.2 trillion infrastructure bill that was passed last year. And that's probably just enough to bring one or two states up to code, but that's about it, given how much we're fucking behind in terms of infrastructure.
How long ago does that seem now?
It's almost a year, though. It's getting close to a year. It's 10 months, I think it was. But you're right.
It seems like an eternity, doesn't it?
It was November, if I recall.
A lot has happened since then.
A lot more will happen in the next 10 months, too. But I got to say that the aging infrastructure is a ticking time bomb in the U.S. and Canada. And there's really no quick and cheap solution to this. It's basically you got to spend money, a lot of it, to get it done. It's really going to cost us a lot of money, and money that we haven't even yet printed. And on the topic of infrastructure, California is doing a bang-up job at showing how things should not be done. Their power grid looks like it's taxed to the max, and they cannot cope with the demand. And citizens are warned of blackouts, and they're asking their residents over there in California to set their thermostats to 78 degrees or higher, avoid using large appliances and charging electric vehicles, and also turn off lights that are unnecessarily on.
Can I ask you a question about California?
Go ahead.
What do you think is more likely to happen first? That California admits that they can't do renewables and green and they go back to reliable petro energy, or that they change the name of blackouts because some interest group says it's racist? What do you think happens first? Where would you put your money there?
The second. It's going to be colorless outs. That's probably what they're going to be calling moving forward. So, yes,
clown world everywhere.
So they got brownouts over there. But keep in mind, they're going to be banning the sale of internal combustion engine cars, new internal combustion engine cars, starting 2035. How the hell are they going to be able to sustain a lot of people actually buying a lot of electric vehicles and still be able to not have brownouts, blackouts, whatever? But maybe we should also talk about stimulus packages and stimulus checks. And this is what's going on in Pennsylvania right now with their governor, Tom Wolf, introduced that the state, they should use the American Rescue Plan dollars to send direct payments to Pennsylvania residents. And he wants to send about $2,000 direct payments to Pennsylvanian households with an income of $80,000 or less. I thought the economy was strong and we avoided a recession due to a very strong labor market. But I don't know. I mean, is that enough to give out stimulus checks? Or is it really weak out there in terms of the economy? I don't know. Have we been lied to? Janet Yellen, I'd love to get you on the show to get some clarity on this. Joey, have you ever heard a term of quiet quitting?
Oh, yeah, of course. I love that term. It's one of my COVID favorites. You can explain what it is?
It's people that are...
They used to just call this working, by the way.
It's people that are fatigued and disenfranchised and not willing to go above and beyond given whatever they're set to do. So did I get that correct or did I?
Yeah, basically it's when you feel like your job's not really fulfilling and there's no opportunity to advance. And it's just, you know, it doesn't speak to you. So you go there and mail it in and they call that quiet quitting. Interesting term. Like I said, I that's new for me in the last maybe like 3 months I started hearing that. But yeah, it's a winner for sure, 100%.
Well, there's going to be a lot of people not just quiet quitting, but they're going to be forcefully quitting because it looks like on the jobs front, Amazon is closing or plans to close a bunch of warehouses. It looks like dozens of warehouses through the United States. This is going to cause a lot of impact with jobs being lost. Same day deliveries might be impacted, and people are going to have to show more patience when ordering shit from Amazon. And U.S. job openings, well, it topped 11.2 million in July. That's nearly the double amount of that they have in there versus the American workers. So there's quite a bit of jobs that need to be filled. But I'm guessing this is a good thing because all those extra jobs, should they have been filled, would require more gas to be burned going to and from that particular workplace. So it's, you know, being reported right now in terms of the gas situation, gas inventories, I'm not sure if you heard this one, Joey, but the gas inventories have fallen to a 9-month low.
Is that surprising to you though?
No.
So when you refuse to accept the reality of the situation, you run into brick walls of physics and reality. And you've seen that all over the modern world. It's not a surprise.
Yeah. And the good thing about that though, remember I mentioned that people are not taking those other jobs that are yet to be filled. So they're doing their part. Citizens are doing their part to help alleviate the gas problem. And of course, that's good on them. Good on Bob and Alice, they're doing their part. Without their sacrifice, we would be in a far worse situation with regards to the gas inventory problem. But if you look at their data or this data here, their sacrifice didn't do a fucking damn thing. Because according to new monthly data over here, the U.S. total oil demand in the month of June 2022 was 20 million barrels per day. A little bit over, actually. The June 2022 number is higher than June 2019. That was obviously before the pandemic, and it's also the highest recorded number since 2006. So there's more pressure on oil prices to come because OPEC just today and their allies, OPEC Plus, they have announced that they're going to be cutting output as of October. This is really not good. So demand up, supply down, it's a recipe for disaster.
So you know that the White House celebrated that as that 100,000 barrel increase in production that they basically just nuked. They put out a memo and a press release about a month ago celebrating that as the work of the Biden White House and Biden himself, obviously. Do you expect to see a similar memo about how Biden caused this retraction or reduction in production? Or do you think that KJP will have some other stuff to say tomorrow when she gets on the mic?
They'll spin it. This is a good way to reduce the amount of carbon going into the air. If you're not pulling the oil from the ground, it's not going to go into the air. So they'll spin it in a different way to make it seem like a W, but it's a huge fucking L. But as for the equities market, Joey, we could hang our hats. We're doing the right things for investors. In fact, from MarketWatch, this is a good one, Joey. I'm not sure if you heard this one. NASDAQ and the SEC, they're both pushing for diversity on corporate boards, which is what investors want, is what they're telling us. Screw profits, lowering debt, showing productivity, PE ratios, dividends, stock splits,
what's
growth.
What's a P&L, baby? Fuck, who cares?
Generation of intellectual property, stock buyback, acquisition of competitors, expansion into new markets. Fuck all that shit. I want diversity in a corporate board. How about you, Joey? I think this is the way forward.
When I go to the bank to pay my mortgage, I actually pay them in the diversity of the boards in which I'm invested. I don't pay them with dollars. I don't know about you. No, it's only me doing that. Okay.
In fact, I got some information about this. So the rules will set minimum targets for at least two diverse board members, one being female, plus one member of an unrepresented minority group or somebody who identifies as LGBTQ. If companies don't meet these minimums, which depends on their size, their boards would need to explain why.
This doesn't work. Like, you have to make money to sustain any kind of board, any kind of company, any kind of organizational structure that allows for this kind of luxury belief. If you don't make money, you're not going to have anyone of any color or orientation on your board. You got to fucking earn. These people don't understand that. Like, I don't understand how this can possibly still be going on.
Oh,
it's accelerating. 100%. There's no end in sight, buddy.
Oh, and as the earning thing that you're just talking about, there's no mention from the NASDAQ or the SEC that 2022 has been the worst year for markets so far in 50 years. So how could they go ahead and start bringing these new measures when the markets are fucking tanking? Maybe the changing the composition of the board will stop the markets from bleeding red. Who the fuck knows? Remember when Powell was talking about pain? I wonder if he included the de-dollarization in his equation when talking about pain being on the menu. Russia just announced this past week they're considering buying $70 billion of yuan and other currencies that are friendly to Russia. And they're doing this as a measure to deal with the surging Russian ruble. Imagine if $70 billion was used to purchase the US dollar. Oh, well, I guess that ship has sailed. Where's the focus from all this change? Well, let's look at the Biden speech this past week, which he had in front of Independence Hall. How many times do you think he mentioned the word China in his speech, Joey?
I don't know. How many?
Zilch.
What a surprise.
Crime.
Have you heard this clip of Jerome Powell at Jackson Hole? I was talking to a source who was in the room, and when he was asked,
we're gonna get demonetized.
No, he was enjoying actually after that. Not many people know this, but they actually all share a bottle of amaretto after Jackson Hole symposium speech. And during that speech or during the amaretto, Powell loosened up a bit, and somebody asked him, you know, what is your, when you say pain, like what are you predicting? What can you tell us a little bit more about that? Put a little color on that. And so I have a source who I'll play his reporting for you now.
Yes, prediction.
Pain. That's clever. Yeah.
I got that on good information. Now I don't know, maybe Jerome Powell might have had a cigarette or something as well. His voice sounds a little bit weird there, but accurate reporting all the same, buddy. Anyway,
As soon as I heard him say pain, I wanted to bring it up last episode. But so let's look at the priorities. China, he mentioned it zero times. Crime, which is obviously huge, zero times. Inflation, which is huge right now in terms of in our minds and what's causing issues with us, mentioned zero times. Fentanyl, a lot of people are dying from that, zero times. The border, again, zero times. Well, he's mentioned Charlottesville once. January 6th, two times. Insurrection, three times. Donald Trump, again, three. Extremism, 7, and violence, 10. MAGA, 13. Republicans, 16. So where are the priorities?
13 MAGAs? Oh, my God.
13 MAGAs, yeah. And even if you say, like, Charlottesville one time, one is way, way higher than zero. Like, it's not a multiple. Like, you can't multiply zero by anything to get any number. But it just goes to show you where the priorities. And really, the priorities aren't the people. And I got to give you some illustration here. Unusual Whales, I like following them on Twitter. They released their Congressional Conflicts Report. And, well, the nitty-gritty here, it says certain committees outperformed the market by a whole lot, while some committee members have made big returns in companies within their committee's jurisdiction. Some people are making out like bandits. Now, names on this list: Jerry Moran, Bill Cassidy, Thomas Caper, Shelley Capito, Mitch McConnell, so and many, many more. So both red and blue represented here. How the fuck did these people make so much money when the markets are tanking? Well, I could tell you there's ways to benefit from all this. In fact, we had the Inflation Reduction Act that came out not too long ago. And there's $10,000 that's available for, in fact, more than 10K available for climate incentives out there. But people need to act now before that 10K will be worth only enough to buy one share in AMC. But to give back on topic of giving money away, California, you know, they're going to be giving $1,000 to people who don't have a car. Have you heard about this?
Come on.
This bill was passed. Bill was passed last week. The bill, no. And get this.
Why? For what?
Oh, it gets better. It
costs $1,000.
It gets better, Joey.
It does. I have no idea. Who knows?
It gets better. Remember, this is the state that cannot keep the lights on because of too much draw from their power grid. Well, the bill offers tax credit to single file earners that are earning up to 40K and joint filers making up to 60,000 who live without personal cars. And because the tax credit is refundable, this gets really good, Joey, residents can claim the full amount even if they don't have the $1,000 in tax liability. What the fuck?
At least I can expect the birth rate in California to go up, right? If everyone there is on drugs and sitting alone in the dark, they got to be doing something with their time, right? They must be doing something with their time.
I guess so. I don't know what. Hey, man. Hopefully, they get together and whatever. Or, let's go to Europe. Goldman Sachs, or we previously dubbed Goldman Stacks. They're predicting the UK inflation to get up to 20% if the fuel prices remain to where they are. And right now, the official numbers for inflation is 10%. That's year over year using the government's selective basket of goods. Belgium, they're going to go the North Korea route when it comes to respect to energy usage. Have you ever seen a satellite image of North Korea in the dark and you see South Korea lit up, China lit up, but there's a huge dark void where North Korea is? Well, Belgian officials, they came out saying they're going to be switching off the lights for monuments and public buildings at night as a way to reduce energy consumption. When they're following North Korea's method of saving energy, you know that we're doing the wrong thing here. And we cannot talk about Europe without talking about what's going on with Russia. Russia indefinitely suspended the Nord Stream gas pipeline until the fucking sanctions are lifted. No more gas is going to flow into Europe. Oh, fucking well. It's going to be a very, very difficult winter for Europeans moving forward. But on the flip side, Gazprom, the Russian national gas company, they declared record dividends this past little while. Funny enough, Western investors cannot benefit from this because of sanctions and banning Russia from the global payments. So instead of getting $2,000 in dividends, we're going to be handing out $2,000 in stimulus like they want to do in Pennsylvania. Pubs in the UK, well, they're saying that they have to start suggesting that the price of beers right now, it's £5 per pint. They're saying it's going to jump to 15 to 20 pounds per pint. Good fucking luck keeping businesses open. Small businesses are going to get smoked. Telling stats, 6 in 10 British factories are at risk of going under as energy bills are soaring. The businesses that have the deepest pockets right now are going to survive. The ones that don't, they're done. Other UK businesses that are suffering, well, they're demand delivery apps. They are no longer going to be providing these services to multiple cities. That's the canary in the coal mine. When people cannot afford shit like Uber Eats, discretionary income is toast. I saw a clip today, Joey. It's been floating around from a show from the UK. I'm not sure if you saw it. This show is showing how fucking bad it is over there. It's a show called The Morning Spin to Win. And this spin to win has been going on for some time. So it's not just one thing they're doing today. But today they gave out on the wheel was £300, £1,000, or paying energy bills for 4 months. Somebody was lucky enough. They spun that fucker and it landed on the energy bill. The guy won. They were going to pay his energy bills for 4 months. And he was ecstatic at that. I'm waiting for the big wheel and the Price is Right to have that energy payment on there instead of the $1. On to Germany. They're taking a page out of Biden's book where they plan to fight inflation with a 65 billion euro relief package. People, they forgot the lessons of 100 years ago. It's just 100 years ago, the Weimar Republic. And Haeckel, the German toilet paper manufacturer who imports a lot of toilet paper into Europe, well, they declared themselves insolvent. So good news, though. The people of Germany, they can start wiping their ass with euros because the value of that's going to go down over time. Joey, I'm fucking done with this rant. Go nuts because I did enough with this one, I think.
You did a lot of work there, buddy. I appreciate that. I'm a little hungover today, so that kind of makes my life a little easier. We should talk a bit about this whole, like, the European energy crisis, Russia, and what it means for, like, the world order going forward. I don't know why it's not, you know, front page news everywhere that Nord Stream 1 is off now indefinitely. There's no plan to turn it on. The mask is off on that. I don't know if you read Zoltan Pozar's most recent article. Did you check it out or no?
No.
It's basically talking about how the world as we know it. I mean, he's obviously written and spoken about this a number of times, but he's, you know, getting into some detail now as time goes on. The world is in a place now where there's only two kinds of countries left. Countries who know that the era of imagined paper wealth is over, and countries who think that they can continue to just exert phony, hollow power and project might overseas and internationally through stuff like the US dollar hegemony, or through cultural exports, or through Wall Street, sort of Wall Street dreams and all these sorts of things. Those days are done, man. They're done. You're seeing this now. I think there's a breaking point coming in Europe. If it's not there already yet, Len, it may be there already, but like, there's a breaking point coming in Europe where there's not going to be solidarity amongst the EU, the Eurozone nations, in favor of supporting Ukraine if the gas bills are 200, 300, 400% higher than they were last year. Certainly at the rates they're at now, you know, before Nord Stream was shut off, before winter came, people are probably starting to talk about that. Businesses certainly are starting to think about that. But in the wintertime, if these things go up another 2 or 3X, you can forget about it, right? That's done. According to the International Energy Agency, I'm sure you can trust these guys. Their Twitter bio is shaping a secure and sustainable energy future. They got a blue check mark too, so you know that they're legit. According to the IEA head, Fatih Birol, three narratives about the energy crisis that are wrong. Vladimir Putin isn't winning. Today's shock isn't a clean energy crisis, and the crisis will not hinder the climate change fight. Like, what are we talking about here? Who is this for? Who is this for? No one believes that, okay? You talked about the OPEC cut, which I had in my notes as well. It'd be funny if it wasn't so sad and if it wasn't so predictable, but the worst thing about all the OPEC cuts and the Russia stuff is not necessarily like the household bills. The household bills are going to be bad for Germany, especially this coming winter. But the big thing, Len, is that all this stuff is just going to lead to one outcome, and it's going to be nationalization of energy or caps on energy in Europe. And you're already seeing it. Macron, people who are supposed to be serious politicians, are calling for caps on Russian oil. And there's a great reply to a Zero Hedge tweet today about about putting caps on Russian oil. Like, well, all we're going to do is make sure that they can't sell their oil their oil and their LNG for more money than that would give us a hard time in terms of providing for our population. And the reply is, what oil and natural gas? Like, you're not getting any. It's not coming for you to put a cap on. You're going to buy it from China. They're doing an end around on all these sanctions anyways. And these guys have been paying out the nose for it. So whatever. We don't have to talk about Europe that much. I do think that's an important thing to keep an eye on. But I know that everyone who watches and listens to this show is keeping an eye on that without hearing it from us. So what are we going to go to next? Let's talk about the U.S. housing situation. So Len, in April of 22, about 3% of homes for sale were on average decreasing in price from the month before. Do you know what that percentage is now, 4 months later here at the end of the, or sorry, 3 months later in July, I should say. They don't have the August data yet, but in July, do you know what that number was from 3%?
It's 20%, April, I believe.
35%. It's a 10X. So 10 times more houses selling for less than expected coming down there. And then the mostly flat, so the prices are sort of as expected or on average, about 45%. So you got about, 70%, 80% of houses there that are either down or flat. So people are not making money in their houses anymore. We had Ritesh Jain on last week who gave us a masterclass. He's a tour de force, that guy. We got to get him back on. Criminally underfollowed on Twitter, talking about how real estate and debt creation from home values going up through speculative manias in Canada is what drives our economy. If this starts to happen here, and it already is happening here, by the way, I know I'm shopping for a house. This is going to be a disaster for us. and we're just getting started. This is, these are July numbers. What do you, August is going to be 45% red, probably, or higher. It, according to the UMish data, in this incredibly strong economy I keep hearing all about, consumers rate buying conditions for all major purchases near all-time lows. Like, it's terrible. Lower than the 1980s. Homes, household durables, and motor vehicles. So there you go. That's really, really terrible. Now, Axios has a little thing today. I don't know if it was from today, but I saw it today, about costs of energy in the States. The States and Canada are lucky because they're energy independent countries if they want to be, but we don't want to be at the moment, obviously. And what we see here is that some 20 million U.S. households are behind on their utility payments. You know how many households that is? That's 1 in 6. 1 in 6. So we just gave, I say we, they just gave about $300 billion out, right, in student loan forgiveness. And at the same time, 1 in 6 homes is unable to make their payments on their utilities. But if I look at the White House's communication, I got no inflation, strongest economy ever, more jobs created by than any president before Joe Biden. And it's an incredible booming recovery. It's one of the best recoveries of all time. Jack, like, these people are insane, man. And then, like, I look at, and then I look at the what is the fix for this? Like, you're talking about this $1,000 in California, printing here, printing there. People are just giving money away at every turn. In Germany, okay? Germany's third fiscal relief plan, according to Moody's on the German government, will assist economic growth. They're doing another big cash drop in Germany. They can't stop. There is no plan for these guys to stop. Looks to me like there's a report here as well. I wish I knew who this was from. This is the problem with clipping tweets and clipping pictures for the show notes. But at the current forward prices, we estimate the energy bills in Europe will peak early next year at about 500 euros a month for a typical European family. That's a 200% increase versus 2021. For Europe as a whole, this implies a 2 trillion euro surge in energy bills, 15% of GDP. 15% of GDP going to paying energy bills in Europe. I'm assuming that means businesses and households, but like, even if it only meant businesses or only meant households, it's even worse, right? Now, I don't know long-term what this is going to look like in Europe, but I did see that the euro today traded under 99 cents for a bit, like all-time lows basically against the dollar, and the DXY continues to absolutely sail. So, Len, like, is it possible that this is maybe conspiratorial on my part. I can't remember if we talked about this last week, but I'd like to hear what you think. Is it possible that the U.S. is just going to print and print and print and print, doesn't care about the European energy crisis, doesn't care about any of that stuff, because they know that they can do whatever they want, right, with their dollar at home and abroad, so long as Europe and the euro are in worse shape than they are. They will do anything to make sure that Europe and the euro are in worse shape than the U.S. dollar is, so that they can keep flexing the U.S. dollar might at home and abroad. Is that a reasonable theory? It seems to me that it is. It's getting harder to deny, in my view.
Yeah, and even I could throw a wrench in that. What if it was the euro that remained strong? Did it really matter? Does the U.S., their domestic policy?
Because there's got to be a flight, right? Like, there's got to be a flight somewhere to cash during a time like this, right? Mm-hmm. And so, yeah, most of the time would be the U.S. dollar. But if the U.S. dollar was failing or flopping around, right, you'd rather be in the euro, I think, if the eurozone was showing relative strength. But the problem is the eurozone is showing almost no strength. In fact, it's quite the opposite at this stage in the game. And so I think, you know, for all the stuff I hear about, you know, Biden and Trudeau, I think, promises too to produce a little more oil and gas for Europe to help them get through this crisis. Neither country has increased their output. So is it fair to say that they don't really care that much about the outcome as far as the euro? Because they know that if the euro shows strength, they can't go insane with the dollar. I think that's a reasonable stance. Honestly, I do. And I don't know enough about it to really flesh it out, but maybe we can bring on a guest who does and we can talk to him about it, because I think that's a reasonable stance to have at this stage.
Yeah, I don't know what to say about that. The only thing I would add is, if the euro was strong, there's still going to be a massive demand for the U.S. dollar if the U.S. dollar was failing in comparison to that, just because of the fact that Saudis, up until recently, they've been settling a lot of their trade for oil in U.S. dollars. That creates a lot of demand for US dollar. So regardless of how strong it is moving forward, so that alone is just going to give a real kick to the ass for the US and make things move for them. But yeah, there would be a flight towards the euro if it was stronger, but how much? I don't know. This is something that's well beyond me. We'd have to get somebody to talk about this more in depth.
I just think like all these things, Len, and at the same time, you know, as far as Bitcoin goes, since this is a Bitcoin show after all, do you know what threshold Bitcoin just crossed last week, sort of underreported and under the radar?
I don't even have a clue.
100 trillion total dollars transacted in its lifetime in value.
Okay.
Nice number. That's a nice number. And went underreported. Everything going well in Bitcoin land. And, you know, TikTok, next block, et cetera, et cetera.
Yeah. I mean, you tell me this, it's like ho-hum, right? It's like,
yeah.
All right. Yeah. I mean, yeah. Good news.
More adoption, more people starting to understand it. And I know on our side of things, you know, I think if I look at, like I said on Ben's show on Friday, if I look at the quality of our enemies now compared to 5 years ago, it's clear that we're over the target. And so I'm happy to talk about economics, happy to talk about sort of macro issues that are going to eventually going to drive the price of Bitcoin up, because people will just get so sick and tired of being debased all over the place. And now the debasement's not, there's no mask over it, right? There's no mask over the debasing of the currency now in America, Canada, and in the Eurozone as well. So let's see. I'm excited, man. It's a good time to be Bitcoin out. It's just stacker's paradise at these prices. And I heard today on McCormick's show, he had Rational Root on, who's a good good chart guy, a humble chart guy, doesn't live and die by the star signs, but did do a little talking about, you know, price action and how this is a reasonable place to assume there's a nearby bottom if it's not, you know, bottomed already. And I'm happy to buy around here, man. I'm happy to buy around here. I know you are too. I think everyone watching and listening probably feels the same.
Agreed. Yeah, let's move on to the Canadian news. There's going to be a few stories I want to chop off my list here. And you mentioned you're still in the market for buying a home, which is, yes, I sir. Think, to be a good position to be in. So take this this with a grain of salt. This could be truthful, it could be not. The Canadian housing market is...
Wait a minute. Can we put that on the podcast title there? Take this with a grain of salt. Could be true, maybe not. Canadian Bitcoiners podcast.
Because this is a prediction by the TD Bank about the housing market. So it's, you know, they're throwing darts like on a board. Who the hell knows if this is going to be true? But they're predicting the housing market's going to suffer quite a bit, and it will be a 25% decline in the prices by early 2023. And we've already seen quite a drop so far with the housing market, and prices have dropped, inventory, it continues to rise, rates are going up, and there's less money available for people to spend on mortgages. So these are all things that are to take into consideration with to what's going to happen with the housing market moving forward. And the Canada Bank of Canada, they expect to raise rates 3 times for the rest of this year, from what I understand, one more time this month, and probably another 2 in November, December. So it's going to be very costly for people to fund their homes, because the mortgage prices are going to be going quite a bit. Or the payments towards the mortgage will be going quite a bit. So, yeah, so take that with a grain of salt, Joey. I'm not sure if this is truthful or not, but what camp are you in? Do you still think that there's going to be a pretty significant decline in the home prices, or are we kind of near the bottom in terms of the price going down?
You're going to get another 75 bips on Wednesday, right, from Tiff and the boys. Let's see. I mean, in my limited exposure to the Ontario housing market, I will say that prices have become a lot more reasonable. I said this on Tom and Nick's show a couple weeks ago too, that you're starting to see now prices kind of come down from orbit. The question is, you know, when are they going to start being listed at reasonable prices? Because that's a different story altogether, right? You may be getting to that point soon too. Like I think I mentioned, the prices are becoming a little more reasonable, but the sellers are really not becoming more reasonable, at least not yet. They're still listing very high and refusing to play ball in a lot of cases. But I think we're getting there. Another 75. Now, here's a question for you. Mm-hmm. Do you think that this is going to be the last hike and they're going to hold on for a while and see what happens with the Canadian economy, let these things kind of, you know, flush through the economic machine before they decide what to do next?
Are you talking about the September rate hike? You think that you're asking about that particular one?
Yeah.
Anything is on the table. It's hard for me to predict, because they continue to raise, and it's the economy is suffering as a result, but they have to do something with inflation. And it looks like they're not going to stop spending a lot of money. So what are they going to be doing as a result? Let's raise rates and try to make the Canadian dollar more attractive. I don't know. What do you think? I have no fucking clue.
I think this is going to be the last one, if I had to guess. I think you're seeing significant pain. I think it also matters a lot what happens in the fall. Like, I hate to bring COVID into the equation, but if we do get restrictions, as is being rumored, you know, like, what, how's that going to look? If the economy, you know, goes into any form of lockdown again, that's going to be incredibly damaging. So maybe if that's on the table, they try and put as many bullets in the chamber as they can so they can bring rates down, you know, at a similar taper if needed. But I don't know, honestly, this, like we said last week and 2 weeks ago as well, I think there's so many moving parts now that all have tangible impacts on day-to-day life. It's not just the business cycle, quote unquote, it's people's lives. And if, and don't forget, some variable rate mortgages have that, I don't know what the term is, but like, if the rates go up high enough, you get like a real punch on your payments, right? You may not get that punch if you get like two hikes, but if you get three or four hikes, you get past a certain interest rate, you have to, your payment goes up significantly. And so, you know, if we hit that for, you know, I'm sure that the Bank of Canada is looking at how many people have those mortgages and trying to walk a fine line, because, you know, the U.S. is really in a lot of pain over their rate hikes. And I think we would be in the same situation if we got too high. So let's see. The only thing that makes me think maybe they'll just raise indiscriminately is that there's not an election here, at least not on the horizon anytime soon. So
I hear so many different rumors in that front.
Election?
Yeah. Yeah.
Federal. We're a year in, less than a year in.
The rumor is who the heck knows if this is true, but there's going to be one triggered this year, before the end of this calendar year. And if you're going to do that, I don't foresee another winter election. The last time we had a winter election
Wait a minute. Like, this is breaking news here. We got to get someone on Fiverr to make us a video for this kind of stuff. You're telling me you've heard, and I'm not going to say you're well-connected, but I know you, and you wouldn't say this if it wasn't true. You've heard that there may be a federal election triggered before the end of 2022.
Yes.
Wow.
I don't, if I'm going to have to bet, I'm going to say probably not, but it's definitely a possibility. It always is with a minority government, but the way I understand it, there's a lot of disgruntled people that are supporting the governing party right now. And I'm not saying internal people from the other party that's supporting them. The orange party is disgruntled with the reds. And yeah, that's going to cause some problems moving forward. And if that happens, my guess is it's probably not going to be a winter election. We had a winter election back in 2006. It was December to January 2005 to 2006. And I don't foresee another one, especially if there's going to be COVID going around, at least the potential COVID going around. So if there's going to be an election, it's going to have to be called within the next month and a half, month or so. If not, then we're probably good for the rest of this year. But who knows? Anything else you want to add to that or no?
It's breaking news. That's all. Go ahead. What's next?
So we were talking about housing. So it's a good segue to the next topic. And this is from Better Dwelling. And it's talking about the Canada's housing sector. It's actually very, very important to Canada's GDP. And if it does go down, if the housing market does suffer a real step back in terms of its performance, Canada, we're going to suffer too, and more so than the United States, in fact. Canada's economy is, if you look at it, is 30% more dependent on real estate than the U.S. was in 2006. Right now in Canada, over 1 in 10 GDP dollars were generated from residential investments. That's a lot. And for context, the U.S. was considered dangerously dependent on housing back in 2006 when it hit 6.7% of GDP. We're now past 10%. Back then in 2006, that concentration led to, well, the global financial crisis. We're not in very good territory because we are very much attached to the housing market. And when you have all your eggs or a lot of your eggs in that one particular basket, and when that basket starts to fail, look out.
What did Pritesh say last week? Talking about countries that make it to 130% debt to GDP, that of 52 times it's happened, 51 countries have defaulted. Do you think we're going to be the exception? Like, you know,
I'd love to ask which company, or country was the one that made it.
Tweet them.
Did they win the Powerball lottery or something?
Somebody in the chat, tweet at Ritesh Jain and tell them we mentioned that stat, and I want to know who the country that escaped unscathed it was, because that's truly wild, man. And we talk about debt to GDP on this program a lot, and I took my wife out for ice cream on Thursday night, I think. Yeah, it must have been Thursday night. We went out to Dairy Queen for a blizzard. I love chocolate chip cookie dough and brownie extreme mixed as a blizzard, by the way. Outstanding flavor. Seed oil haters in shambles right now. But anyway, I go there and she's asking me about the interview. And I said, yeah, like we had this guy on. I really think he's a smart guy. And I told her about the debt to income thing and about the housing market and how housing creates wealth. And for the first time, you know, in the year and a half I've been doing the show and the 5 years I've been a Bitcoiner, she's like, do you think we're fucked? Like, do you think like the country is fucked? And I was like, honestly, I don't know. But, you know, part of the reason I buy Bitcoin is because I think if we do get to a situation like that, all those things are going to decouple from Bitcoin's price. People are going to, like I said, they're going to see the writing on the wall, I think, clearly and without reservation for the first time when these things start to fall apart. And it seems to me, Len, like I'm not a doomer or anything, but it seems like these things are kind of starting to fall apart. Does it not?
It is. And it's all due to policy and what the Bank of Canada is doing. And we could talk about the Bank of Canada right now. And I'm losing faith with those people on a daily basis. And the Bank of Canada is, they're looking like they say we're going to have a soft landing. And this is despite an early wobble. They believe they're going to be able to get inflation back to 2% by the end of 2024. But unfortunately, they surveyed a whole bunch of economists and looks like a lot of them, they lost credibility, or they believe Backlund has lost a lot of credibility. No shit, man. And they believe, or at least the Bank of Canada believes, that they are expected to pull the soft landing, bringing soaring inflation back to its 2% target without tipping the nation's economy into a major downturn. Good fucking luck. Not going to happen.
How do they plan to do that? What is the plan for that? Meanwhile, I think it's more likely that what we see is actually this sustained high inflation regime become the norm. They start talking about a 3% is the new 2%, 4% is the new 3%. I think that's the more likely outcome. And I'm not the only one saying that. There's a lot of people saying that. We said this on the show before. We've had guests who say that on the show. Lots of people on Twitter say that. And I think that's a more reasonable stance to take, that normal inflation will become 4%, which is a double from where it was, you know, 6 months ago. So, you know, I think when these guys say they're going to get it down to 2%, like, I just think they must think I'm a fucking idiot. They must. They honestly must. Either they're going to fudge the numbers or, like, there's just no way. There's no way it's coming back down. Not with all the stuff going on in Europe as well, by the way, which they can't change. They can't impact that. So how do they figure they can do this with just their, you know, their tools that allegedly and admittedly, I would also say, only impact the demand side? What's your plan? You don't have one. You simply do not have one. This is gobbledygook for idiots, and I'm not buying it.
It's a lot of hopium going on over there. All right, we could talk about Q2 in Canada, and it was being reported that the GDP starting to lag, and there was a contraction that's being seen in the month of July, and the economy grew at an annualized rate of 3.3% for the total quarter, the second quarter. This is according to Stats Canada. But this is also short of the Bank of Canada's forecast of 4%. So in terms of their forecasting, the Bank of Canada was wrong. And this is also below the analysts who believe 4.4%. They were even more bullish than the Bank of Canada. That's incredible. Real GDP edged down to 0.1% in July. And looking not very good here. They're blaming lower output in manufacture, wholesale, retail, trade, utilities, you name it. Things are just going the wrong direction. And I suspect we're probably going to be leading into a recession in terms of the classical way of looking into recession later this year. But they could redefine it. Who knows? Because the job market is so fucking strong. And we may never get into a recession. But what the fuck do I know?
Job market is a constant.
It's such a strong labor market. It doesn't matter. Fuck that. it's a meme that you could just go on and on with.
But the jobs, like, this is the same. It's impossible for them to say that the job market should keep them out of a recession if all those jobs, no one can afford to pay their student loans or their hydro bills. Like, where are these people working? The job market is anything but strong. I've really been thinking a lot in the last 2 years about the communication style. Like, when we talk about the show. When we do the show, I should say, we talk about this lowest common denominator comms theory. And like, this is who it's for, is it not? Like, stuff like this is exactly why we tell people when they tune into us, you can't have a short memory. Remember what these guys just said about how strong the economy was, but they have to give everyone money because presumably these people are in dire straits, even though they have these great jobs, even though they have this great education. Like, one of these things has to be false. And you tell me where you think you want to put the thumb on the scale for that, but you can't just believe these guys at face anymore. It's to your detriment.
If you could just put the blinders on and just hear just, yeah, labor market, you're good to go. And everything is rosy if you just believe that shit. But we could talk about StatsCan, and they also have their rose-colored glasses on. And productivity in the Canadian economy, it's up for the first time in 2 years, according to StatsCan. So the things are rosy if you look at that. Well, labor productivity rose for the first time in 2 years in the second quarter. And this is because of restrictions being eased across the country. And, well, let's do a deep dive into this. StatsCan said there was a 0.2% uptick in labor productivity in the first after seven straight quarters of decline. So, you know, there's something good there. And what happened in the previous seven quarters, obviously things weren't very good in terms of having shit open up. So there's something must have changed externally to make this number go up. But one of the main industries that saw growth, well, it's going to be productivity, arts, entertainment, recreation, accommodation and food services, transportation, warehousing, basically all sectors had a little bit of an uptick. But the number of people working more than one job also rose 1.3%. And this is not looking good. Meanwhile, the average compensation worked has also rose 2.2%. Keep in mind that we're sitting at CPI at 9.something%. I can forget the last 8.9%.
I think was the print, right?
Well, yeah, those are official numbers too. So we're still 2.2% in terms of average compensation going up. It's still a far cry from the around 9%. So StatsCan, they're just picking and choosing the numbers they wanted to present to us and say, yeah, things are really good. Not really. If you're an average Joe, things are tough going by. Fuck, we even talked about it last week when students in post-secondary school in Toronto, a large number of them are fucking using homeless shelters as a way to make ends meet. That is not fucking indicative of a first world, a well-to-do, a rich country. This is fucking third world shit. And we got to do something to fix this garbage.
Buddy, you got to wait, you know, 8 hours in an emergency room to get looked at. And I've told this story before, and I know you guys poke fun of me for talking about my injuries all the time, but like when I busted my Achilles tendon, I waited there for like 6 hours and the doctor told me I'd be fine just to walk it off. Like, you know, like all these things are falling apart all over the place. It's very clear, like you said, that we're kind of being like massaged like the frog in boiling water to think that this is still a first world nation. But there's a lot of things that are not the same level of quality that you, I think they might be, listener and viewer, because you haven't really been looking at it every day, right? It's kind of crept up on you. And I'm not saying, I think sometimes, you know, it feels like I'm playing the tiniest violin in the world because my first world country is just not quite so first world anymore. You know what I mean? And there's these little problems that we have that really on a grand scale don't even compare in the slightest to places like, you know, overseas that can't turn lights on or don't have running water or are constantly under the threat of war, death, plague, famine, you know, you name it. I understand that, but all the same, those countries get to that place because they don't or aren't able to stop these incremental decreases in quality of life and incremental increases in corruption, political scheming and those sorts of things. So it's important for us to talk about these things when we see them, I think, and we can't just let them go because we're afraid that someone's going to, you know, get upset that we're too first world to be complaining about first world problems. I think that's the wrong way to approach this.
I think people are aware that these problems exist. In fact, there was the latest edition of Ernst & Young's, their Future Consumer Index survey. They found 80% of Canadian consumers are concerned about their finances. And this is as a result of rising cost of living. And low-income Canadians were the most concerned at 87%, followed by middle-class 77%, and then high-income at 64%. And low-income Canadians are devoting a larger portion of their overall budget to food, rent, and transportation. And these are things that you can't hide on a month-to-month basis. And all those costs, unfortunately, have skyrocketed in the past 12, 24 months. And these are likely to eat up their savings and their investments, and they're going to fall on economic hard times as a result. And consumers are tightening their spending. They're looking like they're now, they're buying secondhand products. In fact, one of four Canadians are doing that nowadays, and also repairing existing products. And that's up to 69% of people that if something does break, they'll rather repair it than replace it. So this is a telling sign that we're not willing to spend money these days because we have money that has to be spent on actual things that we cannot get around. If it's food, shelter, transportation, these aren't luxuries. These, you have to have these things before you can move on to the
luxury
items.
Some people say they're luxury, though. Some people say that we're, you know, like your buddy Emmanuel over in France there last week talking about the age of decadence being over. You know what I mean? Yeah. Like that's what we're being told. Like having a car is decadence. Like fuck yourself. No, it's not. Like we what are you talking about? Turning my lights on, having a long hot shower is decadence. Like this is the evolution of our species. The things that our ancestors worked and toiled over for, you know, centuries, millennia to get to the point where we are now. And you're telling me from a gold palace that I got to take it easy on the hot showers? I don't think so, bro. It's not going to happen.
It's not just cars too. Look, I would imagine the TTC, once they re-up their prices, because a lot of the cost of it, the TTC, is fuel costs, and they're not going to fucking eat it. They're going to pass on these costs to the riders, the people using their services. So the Metro Pass, the one-time usage of the TTC pass is going to be fucking more expensive. And I'm just using TTC as an example. You pick your jurisdiction, it's going to be applicable there too. So everywhere it's going to be more costly, just using public transportation. It's a way of life moving forward, unfortunately.
Yeah, yeah. And what's going to happen when those public transportation vehicles, by the way, are forced to go electric? Like, do you think it's going to get cheaper to take public transit or more expensive?
Well, Toronto...
Everyone knows the answer.
Toronto has been using hybrid for a little while. They've been using it for over 10 years from what I understand. At least I remember 10 years ago they were using it. So I don't know. Let's move to the rest of the news. And this is a pretty big one, but not really major enough that we could dedicate 20, 30 minutes to it. Michael Saylor, and he is being investigated by, it looks like he may have avoided the tax man in D.C. And there may be some tax fraud that may be applicable here. And I can't say if it's true or not, or I have no fucking clue. So I'm just basically looking at this thing here. But I find this to be a very unique way to attack Bitcoin. Why not, if they are trying to attack Bitcoin, why not just go after one of their most prominent individuals and try to take them down at a way that maybe he can't defend himself, and maybe some tax fraud related issues. So I find this, there may be some truth to this. Are they trying to attack Bitcoin? Maybe. I don't know. It's a fucked up story, and it's still relatively new in terms of how things have progressed. So lots to be discussed in the next little while.
Our friend Dick Whitman, BTC, dug through Carl Racine's Twitter feed, the attorney general that's suing Michael Saylor, from December 14th of last year. I'm suing the Proud Boys and the Oath Keepers, the first civil lawsuit by a government entity against the Jan 6 insurrectionists. They caused extensive damage to the district, our democracy, and particularly to the brave men and women of our Metropolitan Police Department. We're holding these conspiracy theorists accountable for terrorizing the district by planning, promoting, and participating in the deadly attack. This guy is suing all kinds of people without any plans to ever collect on any of this stuff. You know, like he's a dog chasing a car, basically, I think. And Saylor is not dumb. He's, you know, he says some stuff that is very inflammatory, like, you know, fuck off, tax this. I lost it. Boating accident or whatever else he said in public appearances that probably, catalyzed this action. But all in all, like, are you worried about this? I think the guy's probably got his ducks in a row. It's about his place of residence, for God's sakes. Like, you don't think this guy's thought about this? It seems like the most obvious thing for a rich guy to think about.
This is one of the things that brought down the previous prime minister in Canada. Do you remember not Pamela Wallin, Duffy. Do you remember
Duffy?
Yeah. That's the guy. Do you remember he was supposedly living in PEI or something, but apparently was living in Ottawa. I forget, something like that. And it was his expenses to do with that, and it was signed off by the PMO, something like that. And apparently that was one of the things, like the straw that broke the camel's back in terms of the last guy keeping his job. So, you know, don't scoff at this residency shit. People have lost their jobs as a result of that.
I think Mike Saylor is a lot more confident than Mike Duffy. We'll leave it there.
What about Patrick Duffy? What about that guy?
I don't know. Maybe him too.
Anyways, let's go on. The Bank of Russia, they're agreeing, or they have agreed, to legalize crypto for cross-border payments. And I, you know what, this doesn't seem to unfaze, this doesn't seem to faze me whatsoever, given the fact that they have to find alternate methods in order to pay abroad. If they could use Bitcoin as a method of doing it, they'll use it, and it makes sense. Is this going to be a big pump for Bitcoin? Probably not. I mean, this is, I'm not sure how much they're going to use it, how much they're going to buy Bitcoin, and how much they're going to keep under reserves. But it's still interesting that they're going ahead with this. And from what I understand, they're following suit with Iran. So any country that is going to be having sanctions against them, this is going to be one of the methods that they're going to get away with it or get around it.
This is apparently still in the works. So I know Bitcoin Magazine tweeted this out today. Bitcoin Magazine, by the way, like approaching annoying breaking tweet territory with their tweets about Bitcoin being adopted as, you know, there's no mention of Bitcoin in the Russian release. And there, it's just the thing that says they're talking about it, you know, thinking about doing this stuff. So, I mean, I'm happy to see this kind of development, of course, but one thing we have to be careful of, and we've discussed it on the show before, Len, I think a lot of people feel this way. If Russia starts taking Bitcoin, is that good for Bitcoin or bad for Bitcoin short term?
I think it's neutral. I honestly don't think it's going to have any bearing whatsoever. What does it change?
I just think it's bad for the optics is all. And so if you don't care about the optics, then yeah, I think you're probably right. But as far as like the US government demonizing it, yeah, I think it's bad. I think they would demonize it almost right away. They can't help themselves, right? That's their MO. That's how they operate. So,
yeah. So we could talk about Beijing. They have a Bitcoin mining pool that's located in that city called Pulin. And it's a pretty big one at that. And, they suspended withdrawals from their wallet and they were citing liquidity issues. And this represents about 10% of the overall Bitcoin hash rate. So a very large Bitcoin mining pool, unfortunately, is suffering liquidity issues. This is very, very new. I'm not exactly.
I love this terminology, Len. Suffering liquidity issues, freezing withdrawals. You're fucked. It's market. Over.
You forgot the other one, the other buzzword.
Unfortunate market, unfavorable market conditions have caused this.
Yeah, it's tough. You know, what are you going to do if you have both liquidity and market issues that you're dealing with? That's the, you know, you're getting the 1-2. So I'm not exactly sure what's going to transpire from this. A lot of mining equipment that is pointing to the pool are going to have to relocate somewhere else. They're not going to obviously continue doing business if they're not going to be able to withdraw the Bitcoin that they're mining there. So other Bitcoin pools, mining pools are going to experience an influx of mining equipment pointing there to their pools. So that's good in that regard. But man, oh man, if you had a large stack over there that you just haven't withdrawn, you might have lost it all, which is pretty sad.
Go talk to our buddy Gandalf if you're interested in getting into another pool. And also, Len, make sure you call your doctor if you have liquidity issues lasting longer than 4 hours.
Is there a pill that could resolve that or no?
Unknown. I'm not sponsored by any big pharma companies, at least not yet. So,
and I like. Have you ever watched US TV when they start doing those commercials for that, and then they rhyme off all the long side effects?
It'll kill you. It could kill you. Heart attack, all manner of things. It's blood pressure medication, isn't it? Isn't Cialis basically like? I thought that Viagra and Cialis and all those pills were invented as a side effect to blood pressure medication. Like it was originally meant to be a blood pressure or a blood thinner of some kind. I'm pretty sure that's the story on that stuff. But
so
I don't know.
When they were giving it to those people that had blood pressure issues, one of the side effects, they were getting a raging hard on. Now they figured, okay, I might as well give it to the people that can't get raging hard ons. And what's the side effect from that? Their blood pressure is going to go even further down. So I don't know. I don't know. What the fuck do I know? But that's it for the news stories. I have, before we transition, I just want to ask you quickly, do you have a Bitcoiner or no coiner of the week?
No, man, I'm hungover. I'm actually thrilled to see that it's only 8:15 because it means I can go to bed hopefully by like 9 tonight, which would be great. So I'm dying.
I tried ripping through this quickly for you. So this segment of the show is brought to you by Tahini's Restaurants, and it's a pull up that picture, Joey.
I'm pulling it up.
So if you are within driving distance of anywhere of these locations, I think there's 15 that are open. Check them out because you know what? It's a great place to eat. And it's supporting a Bitcoin, somebody that owns and supports Bitcoin in Ali. So, yeah, check it out. We got to do a little get together one day. We got to figure out which one, the Hamilton location or something. We'll figure it out.
We'll go to Hamilton. We'll talk to Ali. We'll talk to Sheikh Fay and just have shawarmas with everyone. I would do it in September if you want. Like, fuck, I got nothing else to do Friday night. I'll go there for dinner. Why not?
Sure, we'll do it. All right. So, my no corner of the week is a gentleman that writes for Bloomberg by the name of Chris Bryant. And he's a prominent, he's a person that is pushing private jet usage. And he says, cancel private jets. Here's a better idea. And we talk about private jet usage all the time in a show. And the fact that people that are using it, of course, are people that have a lot of money. And while he doesn't want private jets to be banned, and even citing the fact there's a surge in pre-owned jet sales from last year, and this is a way for people to avoid the hellscape of commercial travel. This is the stuff that you and I, Joey, have to endure because we are not financially fortunate enough to take private jets. And he says outlawing private jets will also be counterproductive because many of the technologies needed to decarbonize aviation will first appear in the smaller planes before they leap to the larger jets. So he's using the excuse that they're going to be doing R&D work on the private jets and implementing all this new technology there. And then eventually it's going to bleed into the commercial jets. And that is why we should be keeping private jets up there. Doesn't make any sense to me. The private jet usage is a fucking scam. In fact, in November, COP27 is going to be taking place. So COP27 is going to be taking place in Egypt. And for those unaware, they're there to talk about the climate change and how they should be mitigating or reducing the amount of carbon that is being put in the air. But it's going to be a congregation of private jets going there. In fact, if you go to the COP27 website, there's even a section on there on how you get a discount for flying in to Egypt to attend this event. They don't understand. The people that are fucking talking about private jets, they laugh at fucking people like us because we're cattle that have to fucking get on one of the commercial jets, wait in line fucking at Pearson or you name the fucking airport and wait for fucking hours while they just hop on their jet and they're good to go. It's people like this. Chris Bryant does not give a shit about people like you and me. He's not fucking talking about the commoners. He's only talking about the rich elites. I don't want to fucking hear it. Let's talk about the commoners. Let's fucking fix the problems. Fuck the private jets. Let's fix the commercial airline industry. Let's fix the problems associated with that. And that's why he's my fucking no coiner of the week.
Unreal. Unreal. Meanwhile, you can't turn your shower on too hot in parts of Europe. But private jet use, no problem. It's just unbelievable. Is that, what else can you say, Len? We're living in clown world, buddy. It's constant stream of nonsense. Everywhere you look, 24 hours a day, 7 days a week, the entertainment's free. Better than Netflix, I would argue as well. So, yeah. Good. Great.
Have you heard the reviews of the latest Lord of the Rings?
It's getting smacked. It's getting smacked. I know.
Fucking
I'm not a Lord of the Rings guy, so I didn't say much about it, but
I was waiting for this. I was, very much waiting for this with anticipation. And
should we go to the after show and talk about this?
Let us do that. The price of Bitcoin, Joey.
I see it there. $19,870 American.
We had a pump because we crossed 26,000, 26,059 in Canadian dollars. Sure, it's not a lot of money, but we passed 26,000. Next, 27K.
Love it. I love it. Thanks for coming, everyone. If you're listening, Fountain, check it out. Podcasting 2.0 on YouTube. Stick around. The after show is coming. Probably 10 or 15 minutes of quality talk where Len, it sounds like he's going to tear into the new Lord of the Rings. So we'll see you over there.
All right. Take care.